You're listening to the NCF&B Podcast, part of the OG Podcast Network. The NCF&B Podcast takes you behind the scenes of North Carolina's food and beverage industry. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at NCFBPod. This episode sponsored in part by Food Scene. That's foodseen.com. Providing professional photography, social media management, video production, and website design. And now, enjoy the show.
Thank you for listening to the NCF&B Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today, before we even get into the accolades of our chef, and there are many from James Beard and from Food & Wine, I just want to preface the whole thing by a little anecdote from my wife, who knows not much about culinary world. Her diet consists mainly of rice cakes with peanut butter and jelly. Asked me last night, who's going to be on the podcast tomorrow? And I said, oh, Chef Katie Button. She says, whoa. So, well, without further ado.
What an endorsement. Sarah Weiss loves it. Yeah.
Mrs. Chef Katie Button.
Hi, thank you. I'm excited to be on.
So the audio might sound a little different to those that are listening because we are not actually in Asheville right now where Katie hails, but we're in the comfort of our own studio and we are speaking on technology that doesn't always serve us correctly, as the first time we tried setting up this meeting 9 minutes ago. But Katie, thank you for being on the show. We're excited to potentially see you over this weekend as well, as we will be traveling to Chicago on May 7th for the James Beard Awards happening at the Lyric Opera House.
And you're going to be there because you are a finalist for Best Chef Southeast.
Yes, I am. And I will definitely be there. I'm really excited about it. It's a pretty amazing opportunity. I feel just honored to be, you know, part of the finalist group. And, you know, it's I'm super excited.
You're not a stranger to the James Beard Awards in general, having been nominated as a semifinalist and a finalist for Rising Star. I believe you were 2012, 13, and 14. So you've kind of been in the system for a little bit. But this time, I believe you are cooking as well at the award ceremony. Is that correct?
I am. I mean, you know, I was asked to cook and prepare a dish because they are really focusing on people who are working hard at giving back to our food system or creating more sustainable food system. And I have been a big proponent of reducing food waste in both of our restaurants. And so we're coming up to do a food waste style dish. But now I've had to bring my team to do that for me, since now I found out that I'm a finalist, which is great. So it's going to be a fun, exciting weekend.
It's a black tie affair, so you're going to be cooking in an evening gown?
Well, that's why I meant that I'm bringing my team, because I can't cook in an evening gown. So I have my chef de cuisine from Night Bell and my event chef.
Ah, because otherwise you could get one of those, how they have like the tuxedo shirts. You could wear the tuxedo chef jacket.
That would be nice.
Yeah, exactly. That would be amusing. I know. And I have an added challenge because I'm 6 months pregnant. So I've also been trying to come up with an evening gown that will fit my growing belly these days. So there's a lot going on.
Congratulations to that as well. That's fantastic. But let's talk about why you've been nominated more in a grand scope, because I think a lot of people want to know a little bit about who you are and what you mean to the state of North Carolina. That's how we look at it. We love the champions of this culinary world in this state and really appreciate those that are pushing awareness and putting a spotlight on this state, and definitely with you, with Ashley, with Vivian, all being nominated and still waiting to see what happens. We're excited to follow all of your storylines. Specifically, I'd love to know a little bit more, because you didn't just start cooking in Asheville and here we are. You journeyed all around the world, and I believe part of your journey starts being in Paris, France. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I definitely come into cooking a little bit of an unconventional path. I studied biomedical engineering engineering. I was doing a master's degree actually in Paris, France, in biomedical engineering at École Centrale. And it was more of an excuse to like live in Paris that was, you know, that would satisfy my parents. You know, it's like if you're studying and continuing something, then sure, go live in Paris for a little over a year. But it was really inspirational for me because I was surrounded by the amazing markets and food, and I cooked the entire time while I was doing this master's degree. And looking back on it, that was really like the first moment that I think of when I knew that I needed to change careers. It took me another year or two to actually make the move, but you know, living in Paris and cooking and teaching myself to make puff pastry on the floor of my apartment because I didn't have enough counter space, you know, was a really big part of that decision.
Was that the moment, like you saw yourself sitting on the floor making puff pastry, that said, there's something going on here?
Yeah, when I look back on it, you know, I had bought this giant, when I was in Paris, I bought this giant, beautiful, a classic French culinary book. And I was just kind of in my time off when I'd come home from being in the lab, like working on my master's degree. You know, I would come home and I would cook something. And I was really trying to teach myself authentic French techniques. And when I had marked off on my floor in like masking tape, you know, a space that I would never walk on again, because I said it was going to be my like counter space, yeah. And bleached it and then walked around it every day. Then looking back on that, I was like, yeah, you're probably not doing what you're really passionate about.
It's not like you marked off a space to make your lab from, you know, right. To figure it out. Exactly. I love distilling down those moments because I think probably a lot of people have similar feelings, but it just takes like one of those aha moments to really figure out, okay, this is my path, not what I thought was my path. So that's cool. Exactly.
Well, and I also love asking, how did your parents feel about this at the time? Because I, one would have to just possibly think that they were very proud and excited that you were going to be a scientist, but in that capacity. And then you said, oh, by the way, I think I just want to be on the line and cook.
That was challenging. Although they were, you know, surprisingly supportive. I quit my PhD program before I told them. I was like, let me burn the bridge because I didn't want to be convinced into, I didn't want to be convinced back into it. And so I burned the bridge. Then I told my parents, and you know, and when I told them, I didn't really know what I was going to do at the time. I knew that I loved food, but I wasn't 100% clear that I was going to be a chef. Like, it's not like I quit and I was like, yes, okay, I know exactly what I want to do for the rest of my life and it's done. It was more of a moment of, hey, I'm really unhappy, not enjoying what I'm studying. I love food. How do I get into this industry? And I found a job working as a server at Cafe Atlantico Mini Bar, which is a Jose Andres restaurant in Washington, D.C., because I couldn't get into a kitchen with no professional cooking experience. And sure. So going from, you know, PhD in neuroscience to, waiting tables in DC was a hard thing to tell my folks, but they were excited.
How does one, cause I can't imagine it's even easy to get a server job, for a Jose Andres restaurant in DC. So like with not much experience on your, you know, restaurant CV, how do you even land that job?
Well, I mean, I went around to all the best restaurants in DC. Like, I just was like, let me set my sights high, right, with my resume. And it had, you know, my PhD. I think I put my GRE scores on there. I was like, I mean, I don't think I should have done that, but in hindsight. But anyway, and I walked in the restaurant, and everybody was just tossing my resume aside. And then I walked into Cafe Atlantico Mini Bar, and the general manager looked at it, and he was like, look, we have a system. Here's a test, right? And I sat down and I was like, ooh, tests. I've been doing tests for years.
Yeah, let me get this.
Wheelhouse.
A long time. Like, I can totally do this. So I sat down and took this test and asked a whole bunch of food knowledge questions. And then it asked some restaurant service knowledge questions. And I aced the food knowledge questions. I was really, you know, it was like name 6 varieties of mushrooms and different wine varietals. And, you know, and I loved food and wine and eating out so much that it was very apparent. And even though I knew nothing about what does 86 mean or these restaurant terminology, you know, were brand new to me. But, and so I flunked that part of the test. But the manager saw something in me. I was excited. I was passionate. I love food. And they decided to take a chance on me. And the fact that I ended up at a Jose Andres restaurant was really huge, because that is a big part of why I do Spanish cuisine now, why I met my husband, why I ended up at El Bulli. It's like, I don't know. Once I decided to pursue my passion, it felt like doors and opportunities just started opening for me. Yeah. And I don't know, it felt easier.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how things kind of, yeah, once you made that decision and once you got that job, is that where you met Felix, your husband? So
I did, yeah. I met him a few months after starting there, because the he had worked in the front of the house at El Bulli in service for right. 5 years, and would come back over to help Jose Andres, you know, in the off season. El Bulli was closed for half of the year. And some of the chefs from El Bulli actually would come and work in the kitchens too. And so all of a sudden, while I was at Cafe Atlantico Mini Bar, and particularly Mini Bar, I was exposed to this cooking and these chefs from El Bulli, and they were using scales and liquid nitrogen and, you know, to measure, and they were using scales to measure tiny, tiny, like tenths of a gram of things. And I was watching all this and I was like, man, I've been doing this in the lab for years. I was like, I got this. Yeah. Like, that sounds really interesting and like right up my alley. And so, you know, I volunteered a couple of days on my days off to work in the kitchen and learn. And then I was pushing to move into the kitchen. It took me a little while longer. You know, you can't just jump from having no professional cooking experience to all of a sudden working in a kitchen. You have to kind of prove yourself. So I had the opportunity to go and work at El Bulli in the front of the house and experience that from that side of things. And when I was there, that was really the moment that I was like, wow, I love this. I love the restaurant industry, but I've got to get cooking. I've got to be on the other side.
You know that the stars were aligned for you to get into this business and be where you are, because, you know, it's not like anybody decides, okay, I want to do this, and then they work for Jose Andres restaurant, and then they go and have a connection into El Bulli, which is, for those who don't know, and most of our listeners probably do know, is widely regarded as the best restaurant in the world for years and years in Spain, in Roses.
Roses.
And then boom, you were there. I mean, obviously your mind and your studies probably helped guide you along that path. And certainly I think probably putting your GREs and your potential PhD accomplishments probably did help you open those doors after all.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, it did help me. And I think my resume going to El Bulli helped me more than I thought at the time. So
yeah. You weren't the catalyst that made El Bulli close, right? Because it shut down in 2011. So I don't know how responsible you are for any of this wrongdoings, but because I wanted to get out there and check it out, but I never had a chance. So are you to blame?
Oh, I don't think so, but
Durte opened in 2011 as well.
Yeah, it happened. It happened right after. So it happened like 2 years after I had worked there.
Well, hold on. So that actually, that segues perfectly, because it's been said, I think by you, that your mother is a huge plotter and maybe somehow worked it out so that El Bulli closing forced you to come back and find the restaurant. And actually, maybe that was part of her master
plan.
Was
she sitting in her throne going, excellent, Smithers?
Right, exactly. No, I mean, but she did plan, you know, a big part of my story is that she ran a catering business out of our house when I was growing up. And I helped her do that and cooked all the time and grew up around amazing food. And so when she knew that I was switching careers, she was excited. You know, it'd been a dream of hers to open her own restaurant. And, she finally saw this opportunity to partner with me and do it together. And then when I met Felix, and he's a front of the house service wizard, you know, it was just everything kind of came together for sure.
You put it together, but let's not sell your mom short. Elizabeth, yes, Elizabeth Liddell Button. Yes. Just looking at her bio too, and it's no wonder why you had this innate knowledge of food growing up, because your mom went to the FCI, which is now the International Culinary Institute up in New York. She has a degree in professional culinary and restaurant management and wine spirit education, graduating with honors. So this isn't like my mom who likes to just cook some rice and some chicken and then now I like food. You had a pretty established base to continue on wherever you were going. So, and that also then leads to the relationship. And I'm glad that we were talking about your mom and your parents as well, because Heirloom Hospitality Group, that has all of your restaurants, is run with not only your husband, but also your family as well. Is that correct? Your mom and dad?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We all went into business together. We all moved down to Asheville together. They were in New York City at the time. I had grown up in the New Jersey area. And you know, that was really helpful. Like, I think about trying to open a restaurant, and if it were just me and Felix, or just me by myself, and all the work and details and things that have to go in, because it's not just about cooking and serving. I mean, it's an entire business. You know, there's insurance and, you know, contracts and, you know, taking care of your employees and following labor law. And like, there's so much that goes into running a restaurant that by the four of us going into it together, you know, my father handles the business financial aspects and any contracts that we have with banks or insurance companies. And, you know, my mother helps with the employee labor law, human resources side of things, so that Felix and I were able during the opening and for all of these years to really focus on, you know, the food. I was, and he was, the service and beverage program. And I think that was a really big part of our success. It was starting out with enough help and support that we could really dedicate the proper amount of time that was needed to make our restaurant successful.
So one could say that your parents are still providing you with an allowance. Is that right?
I know. Well, it's funny because my father runs the finances. So it's right. Like, if I need money from the company, I have to be like, I still have to say, hey, Dad, can I have some money?
Oh, I think we can all relate to that one.
He probably loves that still, I'm sure. Yeah. So Asheville, North Carolina, obviously you were born in South Carolina, lived in New Jersey for a lot of your formative years. Why exactly to move back to Asheville, or to move to Asheville and decide to open your business there?
Well, you know, I mean, as you said, I was born in South Carolina. My grandparents had retired there and lived there. And, you know, even though, and I lived in Greenville, South Carolina till I was about 7, and then we moved up to New Jersey. And, you know, even though I spent most of my upbringing in New Jersey, we came back every year to South Carolina, you know, numerous times for Thanksgiving or to go to the beach every summer. And I have just always felt really connected to the South and the culture and the area. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's part of being born here and, you know, growing up eating boiled peanuts in South Carolina peaches and, you know, and helping my grandmother in her garden. And that I just, when we wanted to open our own restaurant, we realized that meant we were going into business for ourselves and we could literally live anywhere in the U.S. that we wanted to. I immediately thought about moving down towards the South and Asheville. So, and we found Asheville by looking all over North Carolina at a bunch of different cities. And then we came into Asheville and it just felt perfect. It's this small, you know, city in this beautiful setting, mountains, rivers, a vibrant, walkable downtown, and with small businesses, a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, yeah, people who are just doing something that they love, whether it's art or music or food or, you know, yeah, roasting their own coffee or making their own chocolate or milling their own flour or running their own restaurants. It's really a special place.
Yeah.
It almost, dare I say, has like a European feel when it comes to almost like a bohemian kind of artful feel, if you will.
Absolutely. You know, and the population here, we're at like 85,000 now in Asheville is the population. I mean, the metropolitan area is much bigger, but, you know, Asheville itself is, it's still a small community, but we have so much to offer that it felt perfect. And there's such support for the local farmers markets and farmers that we have this this like thriving, amazing, unique food scene that we really wanted to be a part of. And we've only seen it grow since we've opened Kurite, our first restaurant.
When it comes to vodka, it starts at the farm. Social House Vodka sources corn locally from a farmer who plants non-GMO corn. And because it's made from corn, it's also gluten-free. Social House Vodka comes from Kinston, North Carolina, and sources water from the ancient Black Creek Aquifer. Social House Vodka. Live socially. Enjoy responsibly.
So question about that, because obviously the produce available to you, some of the, you know, your meat purveyors and the local ingredients that you cook with are second to none in this country, arguably. But part of what makes somebody a James Beard nominee is, as Ashley talks about it and a lot of other James Beard, and you probably, I assume you feel the same way, is a lot about the staff around you. So I'm wondering about that, and kind of to get tough on North Carolina for a moment. A lot of people that visit here that I talk to that say, yeah, the food's great, it's amazing, but I think the service they'll often tell me that the service lacks something. But you guys, how do you see that? Because you've seen service from all around the world, literally, and obviously you said your husband Felix is a front of the house master wizard. So how have you taken outside influences to really train your staff at Kurite and Night Bell?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that it is about the training, right? I mean, it's about hiring people who are passionate and willing to learn and excited to put that energy and effort into learning. And, you know, you can't come work for us unless you are willing to do all of those things. And then it's about us taking the time to train them. It's about having wine tastings, food tastings, you know, having visitors come down and teach them about how sherry is created, and having our farmers come to some of our pre-shift meetings, just a meeting with our staff before we begin service, you know, and talking to them about their story and what it comes from, so that the servers are armed with all of this knowledge, right? And then when they go to take care of their guests, they can easily guide you through the menu because they've tasted everything on it. They can, they've come in the restaurant and eaten, you know, we highly encourage that. And then, you know, they can tell you little stories, little snippets about the farmers and the products, and, you know, all of that is what makes a great service experience. I think the more knowledgeable, that's all people want, right? They want somebody who's super knowledgeable, but also, you know, only kind of puts their knowledge in when it's wanted, right? Like, you know, you also don't want somebody who's talking the whole time, right?
Spouting about different varieties of mushrooms to you when you're ordering, right? You know,
I could never get there.
It's like, so it's about, you know, we teach our servers to gauge that. It's like, they're there, they have the knowledge if you ask the questions, and if you want and are interested in that, and you show that you are interested in that. But they also know how to, you know, back off and let you enjoy your meal.
What's the other thing? Daniel Ballou tells all of his staff, the servers, never ask a question you genuinely don't want the answer. So, you know, if you go to a table, you don't necessarily have to say, how are we all doing tonight? Because if you genuinely don't care how they're doing, then he doesn't like the ingenuity when I can't speak, but I assume you also require master's degrees in biomedical engineering for all of your servers too.
Yeah, that's just like a standard, right? You know, entry line requirement. More than anything, we're just looking for people who are passionate and excited about learning, and you have a passion for food and beverage, right? Like, that's the most important thing, and the rest we can train.
So I'd ask you this, and putting you on a spot, and obviously we can cut this out if it's apolitical, but what would you answer to somebody who had that question? Because when we're at the James Beard, we're going to be putting a spotlight on North Carolina, especially with us covering it, and then you and Ashley and Vivian there, and people having that impression of, you know, like, oh yeah, the food's really good, but I don't know about the service. What would you say to that person?
You mean if they ask that about my specific restaurants, or just North Carolina in general?
Yeah, North Carolina in general.
Well, I would, you know, I think if somebody said that, I would, I don't know what I would say. I would probably
Man, I would probably hang out with a bunch of assholes.
Well, that might be what I'd be thinking, but I'd probably say something more along the lines with, well, have you come down and eaten with us? You know, have you experienced the service in our restaurants? I think we take great pride in it. And it's not always perfect, right? Like, I'm not going to say that every single person who comes in my restaurant has a perfect service experience. We're humans. We make mistakes, you know, and we try to teach our staff how to respond to those mistakes when they're made so that we can correct things before, you know, the guest leaves. But we don't always succeed in that. But we always learn from them and we take it seriously. You know, we look at reviews, we take out the bits and pieces of them that are helpful from the anger and hyperbole that might be there, you know? And then we take those helpful tidbits and go back to our staff and we address it. And it's just a constant training. There is a fire truck going by right now.
This next segment is brought to you by Meredith College's Master of Science in Nutrition program.
And today in studio, we are speaking with Dr. Jennifer McMillan right here in Raleigh at Meredith College.
Thank you for having me. So I'm the director of the graduate program in nutrition at Meredith College.
Yeah, so Dr. McMillan, why are we speaking with you today?
Well, we're speaking today to chat a little bit about our program. It's all female at the undergraduate level, but our grad programs are co-ed.
Okay.
And so we have gentlemen in our graduate program as well. And we have historically been a program that focused on dietetics. So that is the pathway where you would go and work as a clinician in a hospital or maybe a long-term care facility. But we also have a curriculum now that focuses on the other aspects of nutrition and food science. So things like sustainability to food and culture. We're expanding that portion of the department and program and focal area. Really, one of the reasons is there is an incredible food scene, as you guys know, here in the Triangle. And this is a place where that the ideas around sustainability and food insecurity are bubbling up around our culture, and we're hoping to help professionals move into that direction as well, as opposed to only thinking about food and nutrition.
This is almost a way of being proactive from looking at food and nutrition from the whole sense, from the farm, as opposed to just looking at the end result when somebody is ill and needs to change their habit.
Yeah, it's true. We focus on nutrition education, so making sure that people in the community know what they're supposed to eat, how they can do it in a fun way, how they can incorporate healthy habits and ideas into their families, into their communities. We focus a lot on food insecurity, so what can we do to help people who don't have access to food readily.
For more information about Meredith College and the master's program, you can reach them on their website at meredith.edu or click the link on our website at ncfbpodcast.com.
Because now we're kind of speaking a little bit about the James Beard Awards and your connection to Jose Andres. He's being honored with the Humanitarian of the Year Award. Let us know what maybe perhaps you picked up along the way by just being around Jose and how it possibly influenced your career on how maybe not only how you cook, but maybe how you just carry yourself in the business.
Sure. I mean, Jose Andres is a huge role model for me. You know, not only did I learn a lot about running restaurants when I was working for him, and, you know, we've kind of modeled our restaurants off after the amazing way that he organizes his company and, you know, that side of things. But he's also just an amazing human being. I mean, there are so many examples of how he's helped me out. When we first opened Kurite, about 2 days before we were supposed to open, I had like a panic attack. You know, it was like, oh my goodness, there's so much to be done and we're supposed to open in 2 days and this is my first restaurant and I don't think we can do this anymore. And I picked up the phone and called Jose, my husband and I, Felix did. And he immediately responded, sent himself and like three of his best down to Asheville, like on the plane the next day, and spent 2 days with us, you know, just getting us through the opening, helping us organize, like just being that support team when we needed it the most. And it's something I will never forget because he was there for me when we needed him. And then, you know, he's just given me opportunities since then. which have been great. And then to see everything that he does for the world. I mean, you know, the honor that he's receiving from the James Beard Foundation this year is well-deserved. I mean, he is single-handedly saving Puerto Rico. And, you know, it's truly, when he puts his mind to something and does it, he really goes way above and beyond what people might expect. And yeah, because he expects that of himself. And I have learned so much and hope that one day, you know, I can help contribute to, in the ways that he has, to some.
That's a testament to the man he is and the generosity and how genuine a person to fly down and help you out in like a day after a phone call. It's pretty awesome. Question then, he's been able to be successful in opening up restaurants in different markets. We talked obviously about how much you love Asheville. And would you ever consider opening up a restaurant outside of Asheville?
You know, I don't know. I love Asheville. We're working on another concept that we're, you know, planning on working on here.
Podcast.
And, you know, which is exciting. And, you know, so I don't in the immediate future have any plans of opening anything outside of Asheville. I do love it. If I ever did, it wouldn't be, I wouldn't want to do like another Curate or another Night Bell and copy it and put that out there. It would be something I think different or smaller, you know, but I don't know. Right now I just am kind of moving one step at a time, and it's hard to, I'm not great at planning 5-10 years down the line.
Leave that to mom.
Yeah,
I would say, hey, I want a summer house at the beach. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, there's a Katie Button restaurant in Wilmington.
Right. Yeah. Who knows? Nothing's out of the realm of possibility, but nothing's been decided yet.
Can you tell us anything about the new place or the idea, like conceptually, like is there a style you're going for?
Yeah, sure. So we're opening up a bagel shop, actually. I've been dying to... you know, I think that's part of me needing to bring my upbringing from New Jersey and yeah, New York area down to Asheville. I mean, when Felix and I think about concepts that that we want to open in town, we're always thinking about what are we missing? Like, what do we want in our daily lives? The unfortunate situation about that is that once we open it, yes, we're bringing that to the other public, but then we no longer feel comfortable just coming in every day, right, yeah, to our own establishment to enjoy said thing. But regardless, it's a good idea. So we're, you know, we're working on this bagel shop concept to open sometime later this year, and we will we'll be, you know, tying in a lot of local flavor and ingredients and things into that. It's not just bringing, we're not trying to bring New York to Asheville. We are trying to do great bagels and amazing, you know, breakfast and lunch service sandwiches and things, but using local ingredients.
That's awesome. That's awesome for you. Sucks for us because now we got to go to Asheville to get bagels.
Exactly. I would love for people to feel like they need to come to Asheville, North Carolina for a great bagel. Yeah. That would be awesome.
Well, you know, that's a funny kind of a predicament you were saying earlier about not feeling comfortable dining in your own place. How often would you or Felix together or individually actually eat at Curate or at Night Bell? Do you ever?
I mean, we do. We come in, you know, every couple of months, I would say. We try to come in and eat. And lots of times we bring our daughter. Like, you know, we'll decide to grab her and bring her in. She's 3 and loves food, and sit down and have a meal with her and have fun, and then get to taste, you know, things and see how service is going and experience.
Does that just totally freak out the staff the whole time? Is everybody like, the kitchen's on point? They're like, oh God, they're sitting down. Table 22, PPX, PPX on 22.
Probably. I won't deny that I haven't noticed.
Everyone's like shirt is extra pressed, and
I try to surprise them.
You should come in disguise.
Yeah, I know. You know what I used to do is like sneak in the front door, because our kitchen staff at Night Bell can't see us. And I used to sneak in and like duck down and sit in this booth that's like hidden on the other side of the bar, and the kitchen can't see me. And then I'd tell the bartender not to tell anybody I was there, and then taste the food to make sure that I was tasting it the way that they would normally, you know, prepare it for anybody.
That is a very Barbara Lazaroff of you, Wolfgang Puck's former wife.
Oh, yeah.
I worked for her for a long time, and she would come in wigs and be in the corner. But the funniest part is we're like, oh, look, there's Barbara Lazaroff in a wig.
That's funny. I have no idea. I am pretty sure the bartenders probably run back to the kitchen and tell them anyway, because ultimately they're, you know, they're supporting each other. So, but, you know,
you built that team mentality. Right. So that's good. They're looking out for each other. Do you know, being that you're in France for a while, do you know what PPX stands for? Is that a term you've ever used in the culinary world?
You know, I mean, I know that PX stands for persona extraordinaire or something like that, like VIP basically. And PPX is the P in front of it. What is that? Like extra? I don't know.
Well, no, you're right. It's just PPX is the way I've always learned it, but it was just personne particulièrement extraordinaire. So it's like this particular person is extraordinary.
Exactly. We use that tag on our on our TikTok.
It's a universal.
But now that we've said it out loud, now it's kind of it's like devoid of the idea of PPX, is that we use it so people don't hear us saying VIP, but now everyone's heard it.
Right.
You can also put it on a ticket. So
now they know.
You won't know.
This segment is brought to you by the Triangle Wine Company. Visit Triangle Wine Company stores in Morrisville, Cary, and Southern Pines, North Carolina. Or order your wine and beer online at trianglewineco.com. And be sure to use our promo code NCFB to receive 10% off your purchases. Triangle Wine Company.
Katie, I know you got to get going, but a couple of questions before we let you go here that I'll try to quick fire. 3-time nominee for Rising Star Chef by the James Beard Award. Don't you think by the 3rd time you've already arose?
I feel great. Like I was telling our team and our staff, you know, just by being nominated, making it to the finals, I mean, we've already won. It's really awesome. I mean, to be one of 5 of the chefs in the Southeast to be picked out is truly an honor. And I was surprised, but excited. And, you know, whatever happens, it, you know, really is totally fine with me, because I feel like just getting to go up there, participate, be honored like that. I mean, they really do an amazing job of making all of their nominees feel like they are extra special people. And that's pretty awesome. I just need to figure out how I translate that and share that feeling with all of my team, who's so deserves the recognition, because we wouldn't be there without them.
Yeah.
Well, I think if I was a member of your team and you were nominated and became a finalist, I would walk around with like a big head and ego, because that's the team mentality. So I'm sure your team feels a sense of pride even to this level of where you're at. And I was going to say, you don't want to, you know, talk to a pitcher in the middle of a no-hitter. So we're not going to talk about the awards too much, because you're having a great time and you're riding this exceptional wave. You said at the very top of the interview that your food plan was based off of food waste for the James Beard presentation. So are you bringing just like a bunch of garbage?
Yeah, totally. We're sautéing up garbage.
Nice. I'm just kidding. Yeah, wait. Lots of salt.
With a little salt, it's great. Yeah. It has a little bit of a fermented flavor to it. really now, on trend. No, what we've got is, you know, we take whey, which is, you know, the byproduct of making cheese, from a local creamery of ours. And I mean, they just create gallons upon gallons of this stuff. You know, and usually it just goes straight down the drain. But it's got a super great flavor. It's kind of tangy, and you know, it's really clear. And since all the cheese solids have come out of it, you can cook with it. So we make a sauce out of that whey using garlic and a little bit of fenugreek, and cook that way down. I know that was kind of funny. It was terrible.
Nice. Be here all weekend.
And use that as the sauce for our dish. And then we're sauteing up some turnips, and finishing it with, which the greens go, are being saved at our restaurant. We use them in our sauteed greens dish, another dish in the restaurant. And then we top it with, fried breadcrumbs. So basically the ends of bread we, would throw out, we save in the freezer. And then once we have enough, we, basically blend it up with water. I know that's weird. And then deep fry it, and it creates this airy, crunchy, bread, delicious topping. And, with a little bit of some nasturtium leaves and, pink peppercorn. And it's really delicious with a lot of things that would normally end up in the trash.
We love that because, it's been a hot button, no pun intended, issue lately, obviously, with, we've had Hungry Harvest on. Max and I, next week are going to be doing some interviews from the Thrive NC event. And just overall the, you know, food waste and food insecurity and all these issues are, something that I'm so glad that you and a lot of people are bringing light to currently.
Man, that James Beard, budget for food has really dropped down very, very low. Katie, could you serve everyone for like a 70 cents per head type of deal?
Right. Yeah. They're dumpster diving.
Yeah. There you go. Dumpster diving, delish. All right. First of all, I can't let you go before we ask, do you know what you're having, boy or girl?
It's a boy.
Oh, look at you hitting the jackpot, boy and girl, yeah. Right off the bat. Awesome. Okay. So if you do win, let's say, will you be able to have a glass of champagne? Or are you going to do the one drink per week, doctor recommended?
I don't know if doctors technically recommend that, but yes, I will have a little bit of champagne if, you know, I mean, regardless, you know, yeah. I'm there.
Champagne right now.
Hey, listen, there's no judgment here.
A little bit of champagne is all right.
Exactly. Exactly. Will you at the James Beard Awards be wearing a pair of black high top Vans?
Oh, I love black high top Vans. But no, probably not. I'll probably pick something that will go a little bit better with my dress. Although that could be funny. Listen, I'll consider it.
I, as people who listen to the show will know, am a huge proponent of Jordans with suits. So you, if you see the Jordans around and then you look up with a guy with a suit, that'll probably be me. Yeah. One last question. And this is the most important question that you will ever get. What is the deal with the Malone Pomegranate Noir?
Joe Malone. I mean, it's just a scent, a perfume that I really love. I mean, I hardly ever get to wear it because I cook in the kitchen. You can't wear perfume in restaurants when you're cooking. It's just really off-putting, you know? Plus then you can't smell what you're eating, but or tasting. So, I hardly ever get to wear it, but, you know, special occasions, I'll probably wear some at the James Beard Award. I love it. I'm like kind of
addicted. What are you talking about? I have no idea what both of you are talking about.
It's a perfume.
Matt knows the type of perfume you wear.
Yeah. It was published in a recent thing.
So. Our research department was up late last night, so
they know.
Watch out, Matt's right behind you.
Listen, if somebody has a scent that they feel passionate about, you know, that's an important thing to know about, especially when you're a chef. I mean, that means it's got to be a good scent. So This episode brought to you by Joe Malone, Pomegranate.
So if you're listening to this episode and you're not following us on Instagram, you're doing yourself a disservice only for the fact that this weekend we will be kind of live in the moment talking to people as it happens. So watch our stories, go on Facebook, go on Instagram, and we will be right alongside cheering you on, Katie. No matter what happens this weekend, you are correct. Everybody that is at that award ceremony, everyone that's been nominated, whether they're semifinalists or finalists, truly are because they're bringing awareness to amazing food and culinary design in this nation. So we're just happy that you are in our state and we get to speak with you about North Carolina and the food that you're producing.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Matt, what else you got?
Well, can't wait to catch up with you and see you at the James Beard Awards in Chicago. For those of you that are traveling in North Carolina or traveling to Asheville, go to Curate, go to Night Bell, and you will eat and drink extremely merrily.
Guests of the NC F&B podcast receive a swag bag, including gifts from these exceptional North Carolina producers. Social House Vodka, Hungry Harvest, Alley 26 Tonic Syrup, Michael's English Muffins, Larry's Beans, and 42 and Lawrence. Ramona Wine Coolers, and Happy Hour Vitamins. Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. I am the voice, Brian Hoyle. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.